Okay, we're beginning here, 15 lines down on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Mar begins, Hay itato da habak mizapno varshechei. There was this woman who was selling varshechei. Here you can see in the Masorah Tashas, he brings down a menu of explanations as to what this varshechei are. Either chavilot meshi, they were packages or piles of silk. Rabbeinu Chananel says that it's a margaliot, it's some sort of precious stones. The Rabbeinu Gershon says that it's a mitznefet, shenotim ala padachat, it's some sort of headband or scarf that is worn by the women. And Rashi over here says that it is either bindle or bundles of meshi, and so that it's a piles of meshi, or a bendel, which is like a belt, whatever it is that the woman was making a living by selling these items. Atu al gavro, this individual came, chataf varshecha mina. And he swiped one of these bundles or precious stones or headbands from her. Amrale, she says to him, Hava nihali, give it back to me. Amrale, he says to her, Iyavidnaleich mikadeshetli. If I give it back to you, I want you to be mitkadeshet to me. Shakaltia vishtika. She takes it back from him, but she is silent. V'amar of Nachman. Nachman said about that, Yucholele meimar. She can say about this receipt of the object and her silence in Shakli Vididi Shakli. Right? I took it, but I took my stuff back. This has nothing to do with marriage, or there's no reason to believe that she is married over here, because she took back what rightfully belonged to her. Etevei Rava, the Rav Nachman, Rava says, do we really invoke that type of logic? Because we have a Tosefta that says, Kidsha Begezel, Ubechamas, Ubegneva. If he uses a stolen object, Rashi notes over here, chamas, which is something that was taken and paid for, even though the Balim never wanted to sell it. Gezel is something that is grabbed away or swiped from the individual. Gneva, something that was stolen. Oshechataf selam yada, or he grabs a coin out of her hand. Bikicha, and he uses that money to mikadesher, mikudeshet. Then the kedushin go through. So Hotam, so Nachman says back to Rava, over there is B'dashadich. They're already in discussions about getting married. It was in the context of discussions about marriage. And therefore, when he hands it back to her, the underlying assumption in the giving of the item back to her is that this is for Kiddushin. Whereas in our case over here, there was no context of Kiddushin prior to that point in time. Umanat Tamra, and how can I show you the Shani Lan Ben Shadich, the Dolo Shadich? That we make a distinction between cases in which they are engaged in discussions about marriage versus cases where there is no context. Titania, we have a braita. Amar lo, kinsi sela zu, shani chayev laichi. Take this sela that I am obligated to pay you back, that I owe you, I borrowed from you. Bechazar. And then he said, Amar lo, hidkachi li bo. You know what? I want to use that money to create kiddushin. Bishat matan ma'ot, if it's at the time that he's giving the money to her, ratzta mikudeshet, if she acquiesces, then the kedushin are good. Lo ratzta, if she does not agree, ain't a mikudeshet. Achar matan ma'ot, once the money's already in her hand, afilu ratzta, even if she agrees or acquiesces, ain't a mikudeshet. She is not married. My ratzta, or my lo ratzta, similar to the question we asked in the Tosefta on the previous amud, which is, what does it mean here, that she acquiesces or she doesn't acquiesce? Ilei ma ratzta damra in. Case where she acquiesces, where she says yes. Lo ratzta damra lo. In the case where she doesn't want it, she specifically states she doesn't want it. Haishtiko. That means in the case of silence, avi kiddushin, it would work as good kiddushin. Vinitne mikudeshet stam kihotam. If that's the case, then use the same language that we used in the previous Tosefta, which is that mikudeshet. You don't have to differentiate between her stating yes or stating no. When you say mikudeshet, we assume that unless she specifies otherwise, it would work. So if silence is an appropriate way to generate kiddushin here, then don't write ratzta. Just write mikudeshet. Ella, what do you have to say? Ratzta da amra in. Ratzta means that she said yes. Lo ratzta di shtika. And lo ratzta means that she was silent. Vikatani ve'ena mikudeshet. And over there it says it doesn't work. My taima, why doesn't it work over there when she's silent? Yicholo lemeimar, because she can say, in shakli, I did take it, vididi shakli, I took what belonged to me. Vela kasha, what about the tosefta that we just brought, hachtekadsha b'gezel? What about the tosefta that speaks about the gezel, which you asked, hachtekadsha b'gezel, the question that Rava brought in Rav Nachman about gezel, Hamas Gneva Ushokhataf Selim Yada Vikicha Mikudeshit. Elav Shmina, you have to draw the distinction that I drew before. Hadashodich, Hadalo Shodich, it makes a difference whether they were engaged in conversations about Kiddushin, about getting married. So in that context, then Hatam Kishatka Mishum Denechalahu. The reason she's silent in that case is because she's accepting what he said. Given the context, her silence, her shtika's kahol da'ah, is an acquiescence. In the other case, where there is no context of kiddushin, when she's silent, there it's because simply she wants to get the item back. And then she got the item back, and she says, it's mine. I don't need to say anything. I don't have to respond to him because I'm just getting back what rightfully belongs to me. Now over here, in this case that is brought in the braita of Kinsi Selozo Shani Chayav Laichi, V'chazav Amar Laitkachi Libo, there are different views within the Rishonim as to how to explain it. The Rambam and the Bahag explain that there is one statement here. It was one long statement, which is, Kinsi B'Selozo Shani Chayav Laichi, and then he says, Hitkachi Libo, that it was with no chazara, it wasn't a retraction of the previous statement. It simply was, he began with saying, here, take this for your chuv. And then he said, you know what, just let's get married with it in one shot. On the other hand, the Ran believes that there are two different statements made here. The first one was, kinsi selazu, shani chayav laichi, take this money that I owe you. And he says, you know what, no, forget it. I'm not going to use that money for you, owe you. Rather, let's use this for kesev kiddushin. So chuzer here literally means that he retracted the first statement and makes the second statement. So first of all, according to the Rambam and the Bahag, in this case, you are mikudeshet because you made it as a simple statement. But if you really were chuzer and you retracted from the first statement, like the case of the Ran, then she would be mikudeshet even without a shidduch, even without context, because there, the statement of Yidkat Shili would stand alone. And since it stands alone over there, you don't even need the context to create shidduchim according to the Rambam and the Bahag. On the other hand, according to the Ran, in the case of Chazara, even if it's Stam, we would have to say only in the case of Shiduch, only in a case where they're discussing Kiddushin, would it be relevant. The Nafkamina between them is brought by the Avnei Miluim, who suggests here that the Nafkamina is in a case where the Nafkamina is whether he has to repay the loan. According to the Rambam and the Bahag, where it's one big statement, then actually he accomplished the repayment of the loan and the Kesef Kiddushin in one shot. And that means when she accepted the Kesef Kiddushin, she either forgave the loan, or in the Hana'ah that he's paying back the loan, that generated the Kiddushin, and therefore he no longer owes the money for the loan. On the other hand, for the Ran, it's clear that he retracted the statement, and the money he's giving is solely for the Kiddushin and not for the loan. And so because of that, the payment is considered to be only for the Kiddushin and not for the loan, and he would still own the money for the outstanding loan. And similarly, the Rashba brings two opinions with regard to Gezel over here. When the Gezel is returned, is that a return of the Gezel and he no longer has to repay her for the Gezel and the Kiddushin go through? Or do we say that the Gezel is not repaid, but simply he's redirected this money to be for Kesev Kiddushin? And in one view, the Rashba says that her acceptance of the Kiddushin does not mean that she automatically forgives the Gezel, and she can still collect on that Gezel. On the other hand, in the second Shita of the Rashba, he says that the Gezel is repaid, and similar to the case of the loan over here, he says that the repayment of the Gezel either takes some place simultaneous with the creation of the Kiddushin, or the Hana'ah by which she gets the money back for the Gezel. That's the hana that he's using to generate the kiddushin over here. Kinach nafshei d'Ravasi, ailu rabbonon l'intkuntinu l'shmatatei. After the passing of Ravasi, the rabbonon got together to collect all of the memorot that they'd heard from Ravasi, basically to put together a sefer of all his memorot, all the things that they remember from Ravasi. Amalei haumei rabbonon v'Rav Yaakov shemei. So here's the first of the memorot that they're bringing together over here. So Rabbi Yaakov says, I heard this from Rabbi Yassi in the name of Rabbi Mani. Similar, or just like a woman is not acquired with less than a shavapruta, similarly, karka is not niknet b'pachot mishavapruta. You cannot acquire land with pachot mishavapruta. Now, as Tosafot already points out, this is very difficult, because the whole institution of Kesef and Kinyan Kesef by a woman is learnt out of Karka. So you would attempt or assume to see this in the opposite way, which is, Ain Karka, Ain Karka Niknate B'Pachot Mishavei Pruta. Therefore, the woman is Ain Niknate B'Pachot Mishavei Pruta, because the paradigm by which we create the Kinyanim of the woman derive from Karka. And so then how can you have a statement of Isha Niknate first, and then saying that Karka is learnt out of the woman? So Tosafot over here brings two answers. One is Veshem Yesh Lomar Delet Le Gezer Shav Dekicha Kicha, that this statement of Ravasi is according to those that believe that the Kinyan Kesef is not learnt out of Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephron, but rather similar to what Beit Shammai learnt in yesterday's daf from Ama Ivriya, that you're able to learn Imacherti Kachlo. From there you're able to learn it out from that source rather than Kicha Kicha, and that would solve the problem here, because then it's no longer beholden to Karka. Inami, Yesh Lamar Dorchei Degmar Laminka Tapashut Chila, that sometimes, even though one is learned from the other, the Gemara, when it wants to come and speak about the issues, brings down the item that is simpler or easier to understand first. So even though technically the woman is a derivative of Kinyan Kesef by Karka, nevertheless, it's easier to understand why Pachot Mishavei Pruta does not work by a woman than it does by a Karka, and therefore the Gemara takes that for granted and brings that first, and then premises the second statement on it. Others suggest that the reason that it's obvious by that the Isha in a nickname by Pachot Mishavei Pruta goes back to what we saw in Daf Gimel, that in Isha lo mekanya nafsha by Pachot Mishavei Pruta, that since there the woman's dot is important, and she will not accept less than a Pruta, therefore, it's simple or it's understandable why a woman cannot be acquired by Pachot Mishavei Pruta. Even if you learn out the whole institution of Kesef from Karka, there's an overlaid reason by a woman why she doesn't accept less than a Shavei Pruta. And then we can then take that back and learn Karka from the woman. So Amru Lei Vatanyo, they said back to the Weber Bright, Afal Pi She'eino Isha Niknei B'Pachot Mishavei Pruta, Karka Niknei B'Pachot Mishavei Pruta. We have a Bright that says just the opposite. That even though a woman cannot be acquired with less than a Shavei Pruta, Karka can be acquired with less than a Shavei Pruta. I'm like, Kitanya hi bechalipin. That statement is made by chalipin, and that's the way the Gemara interpreted it earlier in the Masechta, that when we spoke about Pachot Mishavei Pruta, we were speaking about an inyan of chalipin. That chalipin is a kinyan that works with Pachot Mishavei Pruta, yet it does not work by a woman, because a woman will not be mekanya nafsha. Let me discuss the views of the Rishonim over there as to why that precludes the use of a Kinyan Chalipin by the woman. But because of that, the Braita, or the way that we're going to explain the Braita, is that Karka Nikhei B'Shavei Pruta, Pachot Mishavei Pruta means that you can use a Kinyan Chalipin to acquire a Karka. Just like Kesef works to acquire a Karka, Kinyan Chalipin works just like Kesef to acquire a Karka. And that's what the Balei HaTosafot say over there. That you see from here that Kinyan Chalipin works just like Kesef. Despite that fact, it doesn't work by the woman because she won't accept Pachot Mishavei Pruta. The Tanya, because we have a Braita, Konim Kukli, Afu Bishein Bo Shavei Pruta. You can acquire using a vessel or utensil, even though it doesn't have a Shavei Pruta, meaning that you can use a Kinyan Chalipin to acquire Karka. Harde Yatve Vikamre. And then they continued, they sat around, and they came up with another member of Ravasi. Hadam Rav Yudam Ashmuel, Kosheini Odeh Betiv Gitin Vikidushin. Anyone who's not a baki in Gitin and Kiddushin, lo yo'esek imehem, should not get involved with them at all. So here again we have a memra from Rav Asi that we've seen before, which is that if you are not absolutely certain and steeped in the halachot of Gitin and Kiddushin, you should have nothing to do with them. The Marsha over here asks, why does the Gemara put Gitin before Kiddushin? So he says, simply you could explain that the same way that the Gemara in the order of the Mesechtot has Gittin before Kiddushin, so also over here it mentions Gittin before Kiddushin, similar to the Limud in the Pasuk, which says Ve'yatza Vaita. Ve'yatza means divorce, and then Haita is marriage. So even in the Pasuk, the Limud or the Hekesh between them learns Gittin first and Kiddushin afterwards, and this is just following that paradigm. On the other hand, the Marsha brings a secondary explanation, which is that Gitin are much more significant, severe, or problematic when one doesn't know the halachot versus Kiddushin. By the case of Kiddushin, he says it's much easier to be matare pnuya and say that she's not married, or that she never got married, and then it's fine for her to go off. The other hand, with a woman who's already an Eshed Ish, and she has a Chezkat Eshed Ish, over there, to be Matir is a much more complex case. First, you have to be Matir, and then you have to allow her to marry someone else. And since that has, first of all, much greater repercussions or ramifications, plus you have to be much more knowledgeable in the intricacies of the din, that's why the Gemara here put Gitin before Kiddushin, because Gitin have a much higher standard, and therefore you need much more knowledge in order to deal with Gitin. So here's the statement of Rabbi Asi, according to this. Ravasi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Bekashin Leolam, Yoter Midara Mabul. Those people who get involved in Gitin and Kiddushin when they don't know what they're doing, they are worse than the Dora Mabul. Shinemar, because it says, Alo, Vichachesh, Viratsoach, Viganov, Vinaof, Paratsu. So that they swear falsely, they lie, they kill, they steal, they're involved in adultery, they have breached all of the boundaries with regards to these items. Bidamim, bidamim nago, and blood touches blood. The way that Rashi explains it over there is that the blood of one victim runs into the blood of the other victim, meaning that there's so much killing, there's so much bad behavior over here that the bad has become overcome, has spread so broadly that one blood touches the other blood. My mashmo, where do you know from this pasuk what we're trying to learn out? Kimitargim Rav Yosef, the way that Rav Yosef is mitargim. Again, many times in Shas, Rav Yosef is quoted as being a Bucky in Targum, because, as the Rishonim knows, Rav Yosef was a Sagi Nahor. Later on in his life, he became blind. And because he's blind, he can only engage in Torah Shebichtav through the Targum and not through the Torah Shebichtav itself, because Dvarim Shebichtav, Yev Sharlomam Be'alpeh, because things that are written down, Torah Shebichtav can't be learned by heart. And therefore, Rav Yosef is a Bucky in Targum. So even though he didn't write it, but he still attribute the Targum to Rav Yosef because he was a Bucky. Moldin binin minishei chavrehon. That he translates the word paratsu to mean that they gave birth to children from the wives of their friends. Chuvin al chuvin mosifin. They bring iniquity upon iniquity on top of themselves. And therefore, Yonatan ben Uziel, who Rav Yosef is quoting over here, says that the word paratsu over here doesn't mean they breached any boundaries, but rather the breach is that they had this adulterous affairs, and they had children through the wives of their friends. Uchtiv, and on that it says, Al kein te'abal ha'aretz. So the subsequent pasuk says, because of this, the land will be made desolate, be destroyed. V'umlal ko yoshev ba, and they will be weakened or made feeble, all those that live in it. B'chayat ha'sadeh u'ba'of ha'shamayim, the animals of the field, the birds of the sky, begam d'gayam yasafu, and even the fish will be swept away. Anything that is a living being on the land will be enfeebled by this destruction. But the Dora Mabul, it says, the fish were spared in the Mabul. So over here, because of the bad that they're doing in the Pasuk in Hosea, Hashem says he's going to destroy the land, which will end up impacting not only humans that live there, but all the animals and the fish. And Dora Mabul, despite all the bad that they did, everything was destroyed, but the fish survived. Shenemar mikol asher becharava metu. Anything on the dry land died. Velo dagim shebeyam. And the diok the midrash makes out of that is that the fish of the sea did not die. Vilachu afilu dagim shebeyam. And here, even the fish of the sea were destroyed. Veimah David kulhu. How do you know that each one of them results in such destruction? Maybe it's the combination or the culmination of all of these sins that brought about this type of destruction. You won't say that, because the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, because of their false oaths, that's why the land was destroyed. So you see from there that even one of those items is sufficient to generate destruction, and that's the first in the list over there. And so too, everything that's subsequent in the list. Umar says, why don't you just say that Allah is unique, because it's so severe and so stringent to take a false oath, especially with the Shem Hashem, and that's why it leads to destruction. But the remainder of the items have to have a cumulative effect in order to bring around the destruction. It says, Miktev uparzu. There's no vav achibur in the pasuk. It doesn't say viparzu, that they also did this. Rather, it says parzu kativ, that they just broke the boundaries. They did this sin. So therefore, each one of them stands alone, and each one is sufficient to bring about the destruction. So what it says is that someone who doesn't know Tiv Gitini Kiddushin will cause people to sleep with their friends' wives and generate Mamzerim and generate tremendous amount of Aveirot. And that'll be worse than Dora Mabul, where in Dora Mabul, at least the fish was spared. Here, the fish are not spared. So the Marsha asked the obvious question over here. In Dora Mabul, they also were engaged in adulterous behavior. It says, Kishkit kol basar, d'kol aretz. And the Midrashim say there that there was a huge amount of licentiousness. There was adultery. It was a free-for-all, and that was part of the problem. So there it was, Vadai, they were engaged in this behavior. And over here, you're talking about a safek, or someone who may not know what they're doing. So why would it be more problematic over here than it is over there? So the answer given by the Marsha is that mikol makom ze kashe yoter, the case of here is much more difficult. To b'nei Noach, ein bo psul mamzerut. Because when it comes to b'nei Noach, the resultant child is not a mamzer. This avera leads to a secondary or a derivative avera, which is that the child that is born is also a mamzer. And that will, not knowingly, they'll be a mamzer and then they'll marry into Klal Yisrael. And that there's a whole derivative effect to what they do. And therefore, even though here it's a safek, there was a vadai, the difference revolves around this issue of whether you create mamzerim or don't create mamzerim. Others suggest that since the Dora Mabul was the first, they were spared a little bit. They didn't get the full blow of the punishment. But those that came after the Dora Mabul already saw what happens when you act in this way. They should have taken a lekach, a lesson from the Dora Mabul, and they didn't. And therefore, the punishment is more severe, even though the Dora Mabul was engaged in a similar behavior. So now the Gemara continues and brings a third memra from Ravasi, Hadar Yatve Vikamre. So again, they sat down, they continued their discussion, they came up with another memra of Ravasi. Hadatnan, that which we have a Mishnah Isha Sheviya Chatata Umeita, woman who brought her Chatat, and then dies, Yaviu Yorshim Olata. The Yorshim, her inheritors, bring her Hula on her behalf. Am Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Behu Shifrishata Mechaim. That's only if she already designated or segregated out the Hula while she's still alive. So here we're speaking about a Yoledet. Yoledet who has an obligation to bring a Chatat and an Hula. And she's supposed to bring the chatat first, and then the ola afterwards. So over here, if she brings her chatat, and then passes away, we allow the yorshim, or we tell the yorshim they have to bring the ola. And the qualification of that statement in the Mishnah is that it's only true if she already segregated or designated the ola. Aval, lo hifishita michaim, if she did not already segregate out or separate the ola, lo, they don't have to bring it. Alma Kasover, from this you would conclude that they believe Shibudo Labdo Raita. Encumberment is not a Torah obligation. Meaning the fact that this woman is obligated to bring an Ola, that obligation does not have power that is vested Mina Torah to encumber her assets to pay whatever it is. And therefore when she passes away, the Yorshim are not obligated to carry it out. Unless, again, she's already segregated it and taken it out. Basically, what the Gemara is discussing over here is Shibud D'oraita. Shibud D'oraita means that the Torah views your assets and all your possessions as being guarantors to your behavior or your activity. And therefore, the Torah views them as being arevim, guarantors. That means that anytime you have an obligation, all your assets, all your property now becomes obligated to back up or guarantee that you do that. If that is the case, then when the person passes away, that obligation would stand and still be in place and would have to be fulfilled by the Yorshim. On the other hand, if you believe Shibud Labdo Raita, the fact that a person's assets are encumbered is just a social contract between parties in order to ensure that they pay, but that's not governed by the Torah rule, I mean, it's not in Arev Min HaTorah, that means when the person passes away, their property is not then encumbered with this obligation. And the Yorshim have no obligation to pay. And that's what's being said here by the Gemara. That they must believe that Shibud is not min HaTorah, because here we don't obligate the Yorshim to pay. Amravasi, Amrav Yochanan. Afagav shol yifrisha michayim. They qualify that Mishnah differently than what Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says. And they say that even if she did not segregate out the Ola from the time when she was alive, the Yorshim are still obligated to bring the Ola on her behalf. Alma kosovar Shibuda hava deoraita. From here you would say that they believe that Shibud is Midoraita because the Yorshim are obligated even when she has yet to segregate out the Ola, meaning that the encumbrance of her property is a Torah prescription, and the Yorshim are obligated now to take care of that Torah prescription of the guarantee of her assets to carry out the obligations that she has. And so therefore now we have a machloket here between Rav Asi and Shmuel, which is whether Shibuda is Doraita or not Doraita. And the Gemara says, Vabliga Bachad Zimna. Didn't they already argue about this prior? Before we move on to that section, just to discuss the case here of Yoledet, as the Rishonim point out, this is not unique to Yoledet. This is the case by any person who's obligated to bring both a Chatat and an Ola. The obligation is for them to bring the Chatat first, and then the Ola afterwards. If they pass away when they bring the, after they brought the Chatat, then the question exists of whether they have to bring the Ola. The reason that they're discussing this case of Yoledet, because that's the context of the Mishnah and Kinim. And that's why that's the case discussed, but not that it's unique to a Yoledet. On the other hand, if it was in reverse, the individual brought the Ola first, and then afterwards had to bring the Chatat and they passed away, the Yoshim don't have to bring that, because that is a Chatat Shemetu Ba'aleha. It's a case where the Chatat of the owners of the Chatat passed away, and that's one of the Halachot Moshe Misinai Chamesh Chatot Meitot. It's a Chatat that is put to death, because Melacha Moshe Misinai says that a Chatat that loses its Baalim is the Mitah, you don't bring it afterwards. Tosafot here discusses whether that's the only problem, or maybe there's a problem of bringing the Chatat before the Olah. Because we establish a Binyanav, that the proper way when you have the obligation to bring an Olah and a Chatat is to always bring the Chatat first, and then the Olah. And that's a Binyanav, that all Chataot go before the Olot. So over here, the Mishnah seems to indicate the only problem is because the Chatat Shemetu Balea, so the Yoshim are not obligated to bring it. But there's no problem in the fact that she reversed the order. So Tosfot over there says that the Binyanav included in it that Bidyavad, if you flip the order, that it works. And so therefore we are extrapolating that din, that the Chatchila, it should be the Chatat and then the Ola. But Bidyavad, if you did the Chatat, the Ola first, it still would be okay. And that's the way that the Binyanav works. Now the Gemara says, V'flitik ba'achad ha-zimno. They argued about this case before. The Rav Shmuel Damri Tavayu, Rav and Shmuel believe, milve alpe. When you have a oral transaction, an oral loan, eno gova mina yorshim. You're not allowed then to go and collect from the inheritors afterwards. Velo mina lukuchot, and not from buyers of the property. I mean, the encumbrance that is generated by a milve alpe is not strong enough to allow you to collect after the death of the individual or to go after buyers of the property. They both believe milve alpe gove mina yorshim umina lukuchot, that you're allowed to then collect from the Yoshim and the Lukuchot. Meaning that a milveh aper, an oral transaction loan, is strong enough, and the encumbrance generated by that gives you the right to go after the Yoshim and after the Lukuchot. So that would mean that you have a strong enough encumbrance, or encumbrance midoraita, that you can go after them. And tzricha, we need both of these cases. Dimit mar baha, if we only had that case, baha ka'amar Shmuel, that case Shmuel says is mishum, Delom milvek tuva b'torahi. That's because this is not a loan that is written in the Torah. Alba b'hach. In the other case, ema modul hu Rabbi Yochanan ben Leish Lakish. In the case of the kinin, in the case of the chatat and the olah, maybe over there, because it's a milvek tuva b'torah, then they would agree with him. V'yashminen b'ha. And if you only told me the case of kinin, b'ha kamar Rabbi Yochanan de milvek tuva b'torah, tuva b'shtar damya. Because we'll invoke the principle that an obligation that derives from the Torah is the equivalent of being written in a shtar. Or in other words, the Torah is the shtar for that transaction. Aval b'hach, ema modele de Shmuel. But in this case, by the milve alpeh, he would agree with Shmuel. Tzricha, that's why we need both cases. So now, what does that mean, that it's a milve haktuva b'torah? So the way that Rashi defines it is, that a milve haktuva b'torah is a chuva be'it ha-melech. It's an obligation that comes from the king. And since it's an obligation that comes from the king, that's called a milveh haktuva b'torah. It's as if it's something that is written in the Torah. Now, Tosafot already raises issues with that because the obligation, the necessity to repay loans is also written in the Torah. It says, Aish asher noshebo, the person who comes to collect from him and wants the return of his money. And so the Torah acknowledges that that is proper and appropriate to pay back your loans. So why isn't that also me'it ha-melech? So Rashi deals with that by saying afterwards, but something that comes mi iskei ma'aseh atzmo, something that is generated because of your engaging in this activity, or you're generating the problem, then that is not called a milveh haktuva b'torah. So only things that come out of the gzeira ta'akatuv, that come out of the pasuk, that obligate you because of the pasuk, then you are considered to be a milveh haktuva b'torah. But things or situations which you generate yourself, those are not considered to be milvei ha'ktuva b'Torah. The one problem for Rashi is things like arachin, where in the case of arachin, that's something that you engage yourself in, and you enter it voluntarily, and nevertheless, we still say that that's called a milvei ha'ktuva b'Torah. So for those reasons, Tosafot notes that he doesn't think Rashi's explanation here of why these are called milvei ha'ktuva b'Torah is correct. It's not simply just an obligation min ha'Torah, or gzeirat ha'melech. And if you engage yourself, then it's not considered to be that. And what Rashi will have to say with the Gabei Arachin is that even though it's something that you enter into yourself, the actual values are scheduled by the Torah and determined by the Torah, not by the individual themselves. But Tosu gives a slightly more nuanced approach to this, and he says, Perish, Kagon, Kurbanot, Pidyona ben, Arachim, and Nizakin, Shalo ayu adim, Inyan, and Tinat alalo, Imlo, Shinitchaiva, Torah, Beferush. These are items, had the Torah not spelled them out, you would not have known about them. These are not intuitive items, and therefore, since the Torah tells you about them, that obligation is called a milveh ktuvah b'Torah. Aval, milveh, kigon shalavalo ma'ot, in a case of a loan, but even if it's done without a shtar, even though the Torah tells you you have to repay the individual, the Torah never specifies the amount you have to pay back, because it's obvious, whatever you borrowed, you have to give back. And therefore, that's not considered to be a milveh ha'ktuvah b'Torah. Nothing to do with the fact that you engage in the activity, but simply that there is logic, or without the Torah, you would have known that you have to pay back the loan, or the amount that you have to pay back is governed by the amount that you borrowed. On the other hand, by the other items, these are gzeirat ha'ketuv, or amounts that are set by the Torah, that are not necessarily intuitive. The one question you can ask on Tosafot is, how do you deal with nizakin? How do you deal with the fact that damages, which some of which are reparations for the damage that's done, those should also be obvious. So what you have to say here is that there's an aspect of nizakin where those values are determined and they don't always have to do with the exact damage that is done. Or maybe that there is a din of repaying nizakim irrespective of the damage that's done, but more as a form of kapara. So that's how Rashi and Tosafot define what's milveh ha'ktuvah b'Torah. But therefore, the Gemara here says they have to argue in both these cases. Because if we had just argued in the case about the woman and the olah and the chatat, that is a prescription min ha'Torah. That's an obligation placed on the woman min ha'Torah, as Rashi says. Or for Tosafot, it's not something that's intuitive. Therefore, it's a milveh ha'ktuvah b'Torah. So over there, you would have more reason to believe that there's an encumbrance over there that would force you then to have to pay even after death or even go after the kuchot. On the other hand, by the case where the person themselves borrowed money but did it orally, maybe over there it's not subject because it's not called a milveh ha'ktuvah b'Torah either, because Rashi says you entered it voluntarily. According to the Baalei Tosafot, that's something intuitive. You would know you have to pay back the amount that you borrowed. Therefore, it's not considered to be a milveh ha'ktuvah b'Torah, and you would think maybe the machlok would be different over there. We said tzricha that they argue in both of those cases. Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa, we know, is the ultimate reconciler in Shas and tries to be machmir for all the shitot and bring them together. Over here, he has a problem because he can't do that, because in Dinei Mamononot, you can't be mefasher, you can't compromise like that, because whatever you do affects both parties, not just one party. And therefore, he says, Hilchata is milveh alpeh goveh min ha'yorshim. When it comes to an oral transaction, you are allowed to go after the inheritors. But you're not allowed to go after the buyers. So here he does come up with some compromise, which is that he bifurcates the din between the Yorshim and the Likuchot. He's able to go after the Yorshim because encumbrance is midoraita, and we paskin like Ravasi that Shibuda is deoraita, like Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish's Shita, that Shibuda is deoraita. That's not because there's no encumbrance, there is an encumbrance. But the late Lekala, it's an institution, the Rabbonon, that said that in order to protect commerce and the buyers here, because an oral transaction does not have publicity associated with it, so therefore you can't do a title search. So in order to protect the Lekuchot, we said that you can't go after the Lekuchot, that's a din der Rabbonon. This conclusion of the Gemara over here, Rav Papa, causes a big stir amongst the Rishonim, and that is because it's the exact opposite of the conclusion of the Gemara in Baba Batra. Tosafot, you can see, brings the question. He says, Tema, Kamara Papa Gufe. Rav Papa himself says in Baba Batra, Milvalpe, Govemina Yoshim. A milvah pe yoladu after the yoshim shlotin el dolet bifnei lavin. The reason is so that we don't close down the liquidity in the loan market, which makes it sound like it's only a din derabonon that we allow you to go after the yoshim because we want to keep liquidity in the market. Veinu govem in lukuchot, and you're not allowed to go after the lukuchot. The shibud lava doraita, because the shibud is lava doraita. So actually there, Rav has the exact opposite conclusion of what the Gemara has over here. So there are those that say, like the Rabbeinu Tam, that these are sugyot mechalkot. These are sugyot that come to opposite conclusions, and actually the sugyot over here argue. Tosafot brings the sheet of the Rabbeinu Hananel, who tries to differentiate between the cases here and the cases there. V'omer Rabbeinu Hananel, the halacha ma'ariv milvah ktuvah b'torah. That the case over here is talking about a milveh that's written in the Torah, and that's why the conclusion is that it's a shibuda deoraita, like the havamina of the Gemara, that maybe the machloket should be different in that case. This is a case where it's a milveh ktuvah b'torah, and that's why the shibuda is deoraita, whereas the cases in Bava Batra are just a stam milveh, a milveh al peh that's not written in the Torah. It's a nice answer, but it doesn't seem to fit the flow of the Gemara at all. Our Gemara does not seem to be saying that, and neither does Rav Papa seem to say that he is speaking about just the case of milveh al peh ktuvah b'torah. Seems to be here that they're making a conclusion about the whole statement beforehand, whether it's a milveh al peh ktuvah b'torah or a stam milveh al peh. There you can see in the Tosfot Riyaz Zakein that the Rif in Bava Batra answers or reconciles the Gemara differently and says this: V'af agav damar apapa beper get pashut govah min yorshim shlotin el adela bifnei lavin lav lememra. Don't conclude from that the shibud lav doraita. Not like what the Balei Tosfot said. Just because they're telling you it's derabonan that we allow you to pay the loan payments back to keep liquidity in the market. El hachi kamar shum hachi ukmi da din Torah. That's why they maintained the din Torah when it came to the cases of Yorshim and the lenders. Creditors were allowed to go after the Yorshim. Shetikve mina Yorshim mishum nilat delit bifnei levin. They didn't institute this din derabonan which says we're not going to let you collect in oral loans because there's not enough publicity about it. That they set up or went back to the din doraita when it came to Yorshim, because of the nila dala bifnei lavin. V'chein teret shamarif. And that's what the Riyaz Zakein, that's the Riyaz Zakein says over here. That's what the Rif says over there. And the Rif reconciles with saying that lo tino dala bifnei lavin over there is not a reason to say it's derabanan, but the reason why they kept the din doraita, or a reason to show you why they said Yorshim are different than lukuchot. Because yes, shibud is doraita, but we don't institute the same protections that we had for lukuchot. Because by the Lukuchot, they don't have a column. And by the Yorshim, we want Lotino Del Bifnei Lavin. So we have two forces that we want to weigh or we want to deal with. And in dealing with them, in some cases, we keep the Din Doraita of Shibuda Doraita, like the case of creditors. And sometimes we institute something to Rabbonon to protect the buyers, and we do not keep Shibuda Doraita. And that's how the Rif reconciles those two Gemaras. So those are different ways that the Rishonim try to deal with this. All of them have weaknesses in their explanation, but be aware of the fact that this conclusion here seemingly is opposite the conclusion of the Gemara of Bava Batra, Daf Kuvayin Vav, Amud Aleph. Now the Gemara continues, V'koneh atzma beget u'memitat abal. She's able to reacquire herself, meaning we talked about Kesha Shtar and Biyah as the way to enter into Kiddushin. The question is, how do you unwind Kiddushin? So the Mishnah says there are two ways to unwind the Kiddushin. One is a get, is a divorce. And the other one is the possibility that the husband dies. So now the Gemara asks, Dishlam a get. I understand that a get unwinds Kiddushim dichtei v'katav la sefer kritut. That's explicit in the Pasuk in the Torah. Ela mita tabal minolan. The death of the husband, how do we know that it works? Gemara says, Svaru, it's illogical. Hu asra v'hu sharta. He made her asura, so he should be able to make her permitted. I mean, he's the one that generates the problem over here. His existence is the problem. So if he's not here, then he should also be able to remove the problem. Mar says, what are you talking about? Harayot da asaluhu velo sharidahu. We have cases of arayot that live beyond the marriage. That once they get married, the arayot that are generated because of their marriage survive the marriage. And that's whether they get divorced or whether the husband dies, the arayot remain arayot. Because the Torah says that a yivama, a woman who's married to a brother and doesn't have children, she is asura to be married to anyone else. Hayesh la banim. Implication that if she has children, muteret, then she's allowed to marry anyone she wants. I mean that the only hook or problem this woman has is when she doesn't have children, and then she has a zikah to the Yavam, and she has to get either Chalitza or perform Yibum. But in a case where she has children, it seems like she goes free without anything. Mar says, no, V'dilma in la bonim asura li'alma. Maybe in the case where she doesn't have children, she's restricted from marrying anybody else, V'sharya li'avam, and she's allowed to marry the leveret brother, V'yesh la bonim. But in the case where she has children, l'kuli alma nami asura. And in the case where she has children, not only is she asura to the Yavam, she's also asura to the whole world, and it remains in place. Maybe that's the way to read the diuk there. Ela demadar rachmono. The pasuk tells us that almana the kohen gadol asura, that a widow is not allowed to marry a kohen gadol. How the kohen hejot sharia. Implications of that are that a kohen gadol is allowed to marry an almana, but can only have a widow if her husband passed away, and if her husband's passing away dissolves the marriage. So Mar says, V'dilma the Kohen Gadol b'lav. Maybe the restriction by the Kohen Gadol is a specific lav. The Kuli Alma b'aseh. So that everybody else is restricted in a positive commandment. So the question is, what aseh are we speaking about here? So Rashi says the aseh that we're speaking about here is, Baitzav haital ish acher. By the get, it says that she will go out and then marry someone else. Ayidei gerushin. That's through a get. V'lo yedei mitah, but not by death. So it's an iser aseh that is generated because gitin give you permission to go marry someone else. The implications of that are death does not give you that permission. So the iser of marrying someone when she is a widow derives from the fact that she is permitted when she is divorced. And so because of that, you get an iser aseh. That's how Rashi learns it. On the other hand, the Bali et Tosafot see as being a more fundamental aseh, which is omeri, diga aseh be'eshet ish, kigon, v'davak b'ishto, the posuk in Breishit Bet, which says that a person will marry and stick together with his wife. They will become one and be together. And now with your friend's wife. So that is the aseh that we're speaking about here, that once they are bound in marriage, that marriage cannot be unwound. And by the way, even though this sounds far-fetched, there were sects in the time of Bayit Sheni, towards the end of Bayit Sheni, including the sects in the Qumran scrolls, that believed that an individual was only allowed to marry one woman. And they did not believe in polygamy, but in addition to that, they believed that once there was a shidduch between a man and a woman, that was like the only shidduch. They were unique and specially for each other, and that there was nobody else. And that means that even if they got divorced, the woman would not be allowed to be remarried, because that her husband who's alive is the only man that is designated for her. Unless he passes away, then she's not allowed to marry another man. So what seemingly is far-fetched here, the Gemara is going to discard that ideology, but you should know that that ideology was prevalent at the time, and that it wasn't so far-fetched to say something like this, that even after the death of the husband, maybe there's this concept that exists, that these two people are uniquely a shidduch together, and once you've found your shidduch, there is no other shidduch in the world. And since you lived happily and the husband passed away, there's no reason for this or ability for this woman to get remarried. But that's the Havamina here, that there's this aseh that exists. The Pnei Yeshua over notes over here that the nafkamina between Rashi's explanation and Tosafot's explanation is whether this has application only to Jews or even to non-Jews. Because over here, Rashi quotes a pasuk which is relevant only to Jews, meaning it's after Matan Torah, post-Matan Torah. And so because of that, it would only have application by Jews. The aseh would not exist by non-Jews. And that means that the Havamina would have been here that non-Jews would not be governed by this problem, that an almana would be able to get married. Now then, Tosafot brings it from much more of a fundamental mitzvah that comes from the universal mitzvah of Davak B'Ishto. They would say that this has equal application by Jews and non-Jews. And therefore, when we say here that an almana can't get remarried, it would apply to everyone that they would not get remarried. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Hayasei ma'avite. What exactly is this asei doing over here? Ida hanyam mita tabal. If the death of the husband is good enough to take away the Isur and then stick on the Aseh, to start the Gamre, then it should be good enough just to remove all the Isur. If the death of the husband doesn't change the facts on the ground, then Tukma Milta Kamaita, she should remain a Surah like she did before, and then why are you changing from an Isur Lev to an Isur Aseh? Alam Alo, Gamre says, why not? Because, Afikte Mimita Vukme Aseh. It took her out of the death penalty, and now moved it to an Aseh, meaning that the punishment and the restriction change it. Me da hava psule mukdashim. We have a similar case when it comes to mukdashim, they get a hekdesh, it gets a mum in it, and you're allowed to redeem it. Dimi kara, when they were hekdesh, it buhumi ila. Then if you misappropriate that hekdesh, you're chayav in mi ila. Vasire begize bovoda. And you're also not allowed to do work with them or shear them. Parkinu, once you've redeemed the animals, mi'ila leitahu. The mi'ila disappears because you redeemed the animals, no longer belongs to Hekdesh. The Giza of Avoda is Sire. On the other hand, the Giza, or the Easter Giza and Avoda remains in place. So you have this. Sometimes, the change in status only removes parts of the Isur, but leaves other parts of the Isur in place. Even though, again, the comparison or the parallel is not exact, because in the case of Psulim and Dashim, you're dealing with two different Isurim. You're dealing with the Isur Mi'ila, Isur Giza Vahuda. In our case, you're dealing with a single Isur of the woman's ability to get married to someone else. But nevertheless, the Gemara sees in this a paradigm by which status changes can change what is relevant in terms of Isurim. So the Gemara says, Elamed Amar Kra. The Pasuk says, Pen Yamut B'Milchama, V'Ish Acher Yikachena. Because the Pasuk says that, why don't we want someone to go out to battle who's newly married? Because maybe he'll die in the battle. V'Ish Acher Yikachena, and then someone else will marry this woman. Well, how can someone else marry this woman if what happened to this guy is that he died in the battle? That means that she's a widow. So see from here that it is Mutar to marry a widow. Matkiflar Rav Shisha Breid Ravida, Emaman Acher Yavam. Who says that the Acher over here means a third party? Maybe the other person over here means the Yavam. So Amar Ravashi Beit Chuvot Badavar. We have two answers to that. Chado, the Yavam lo yikre Acher. Yavam is not called an Acher, even though as Tosafu points out that the Yavam is called an Acher in certain places. Nevertheless, Tosafu says in this case, the Yavam would not be known as Acher. Other Rishonim point out because over here when the Yavam comes and marries the woman, he actually gives a shame and sherit to the person who passed away in the battle. If a third party takes her, that's the terrible thing, because then this person will have no remnant at all left. Voktiv, and also the pasuk says, V'sana ish acharon, v'katav la sefer kritut, o ki amut ish acharon. It says there in the case of Yatzav Ital ish acher, that she goes out and marries another man. Then the second marriage, after she divorces her first husband, marries the second man, then there are two ways for that second marriage to be dissolved. One of them is, she'll get divorced from the second man, or that the second marriage, the guy dies. Over there, there's a hekesh between these two terminations of the second marriage. Just like divorce from the second marriage terminates it completely, and now she is able to marry Hariat Muter de Choladam. So too, death does the same thing, which is a complete dissolution of the marriage. And this is the source for the fact that when a husband dies, the woman is completely freed, or the marriage dissolves, and she's then able to marry whoever she chooses, just like when she gets Gerushin. Now the Gemara continues, Vayivama niknet bibia. The only way to acquire Yivama is through Bia. Gemara says, Bibia minolan. How do you know that Bia works in order to acquire Yivama? Amakra, the Pasuk says, Yivama yavola vilakacha lo leisha. That he will engage in marital relations with her, and that will bring her as a wife to him. So it's explicit in the Pasuk. Vema lukula milta kisha. Why don't we say then, v'lakacha lo leisha means that everything that works for a normal marriage should work over here. Lo salka datcha, you wouldn't think that, Tanya. Yocho yehu kesef fishtar gomrim ba, kederach shebiya gomerit ba. Because you have a brayta that says you would think that maybe kesef and shtar would work by yivamah, just the way, like the way that biya works. Kederach shebiya gomerit ba, tamalomar, v'yibma. It says that they will have yibum. Bia gomeret ba, vein kesef ushtar gomrim ba. Bima, as Rashi knows, is extraneous over there. It's a duplication of what is said there, and therefore, bima means, first of all, that we're going to see in a second Baal Korcha, but more importantly, it is la akev, to say that only bia works and nothing else works. Bia gomeret ba, vein kesef ushtar gomrim ba. That's what we learn from that mute. Vein amai, vibma, de Baal Korcha, mia beim. Maybe the vibma we learn from another limud, which is that the Yibum can take place even against her will. We don't need her acquiescence for the Yibum to take place. If he has Bia with her even against her will, that consummates the Yibum. Where it says, Imkein leimakra v'yibim. My v'yibma. So there, what's the extra hay for? Shmami na tarte. We can learn both things out of this word. One, that you can have Yibum even Baal Korcha. And number two is that Bia is the only vehicle for acquiring a Yibama. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Yudalid Amud Aleph.